This Lent, as we prepare for the cross and Easter of Jesus Christ, we'll be spending time in an Old Testament story that has some parallels with it. The Joseph story. It's one Leo Tolstoy, who wrote War and Peace, called one of the greatest ever written down. It's a story of tragedy and grace, and it's a story of family, because the nation of Israel knew itself as a family in a very literal sense. Israel started as one person's name. Jacob, the grandson of Abraham, was named Israel as a blessing. And the 12 tribes of Israel, well, that's just the name for the 12 branches of the family tree that came from 12 sons. And they told the stories of those 12 sons as ways of talking about how God would bless their whole nation. Reminders of how, even in turbulence, the whole people of God was a family. But the Bible is not romantic about family. The story has all the best of family, transformed by grace and love and unexpected glory. But as we start the Joseph story at the beginning, we start with the very worst of family, with vicious sibling rivalries, abandonment, abuse, and pain. With the hand of God not quite yet visible. I want to follow the movements of the story, and that means a little bit longer pieces. So I've shortened the sermon part of my sermon a little so we can focus more on the story itself. The good news about even a longer scripture passage like this is it's not complicated theology to hold in your head. It's the unfolding of a story. So I hope you'll bear with me. From Genesis 37, listen for the word of God. Jacob lived in a land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream and told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. And this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father this, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but the father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers." Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks? They've moved on from here, the man answered. I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes the dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now? Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornate robe back to their father and said, we found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe. He recognized it and said, it is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave. So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. This is the word of the Lord. These are the people God is committed to. Since before they have been born, the sort of people who make you go, really? These people? These are God's family, quite literally. It's from one of the miscreant murderous brothers that Jesus himself will be descended. They are a family, and quite an ugly one here. The ugliness goes back before they were born, too. They grew up with pain and strife also. Their father, Jacob, Israel, he was a dreamer like Joseph. His parents also played favorites, and the brothers hardened along those lines until it erupted. And Jacob snuck away his brother's birthright, and his hunter of a brother threatened to kill him, and he fled away into a far country to work for a distant relative. And on his way, he had not even a pillow to his name. And he laid his head on a rock in the wilderness, and his dreaming eyes were opened, and he saw a ladder to heaven. But he worked as a laborer, not a dreamer. He raised his relative's sheep for years and years and asked to marry his daughter Rachel and worked for 7 years for the permission to do that. And then the unscrupulous uncle snuck his other daughter under the veil at the wedding. And he found himself married to the wrong woman and having to work another 7 years for permission for another marriage. Meanwhile, living in a marriage he was tricked into and trying to keep the peace. And he never stopped the visions and the dreams, even in his life as a farm laborer. He found himself wrestling with a vision of God by the river, who gave him a new name, Israel. He struggles with God. And he did marry Rachel, the woman he loved and worked 14 years for. And he prospered and came home and reconciled with his brother, who had finally let bygones be bygones. And he lived there in prosperity and blessing with his 12 sons, but it wasn't perfect. Like many families that have spanned multiple marriages, the joints and splits in the family are not always easy. And this one especially. See, most of the sons were sons of the first wife, who knew he had married her by accident. And so she sought her love only from her children, and the children seemed to know it too. And the wife Jacob really loved had trouble having children for a long time, and then finally, as he was getting on in years, he had Joseph, who was the baby of the family, and a child they thought wasn't coming. And as he grew, I'm sure Jacob could see, he's like me. This one's like me. He's a dreamer. Joseph was another person who just seemed to be able to sense God. Jacob loved his practical sheep-raising sons. Of course he did. But Joseph was someone he understood on a different level. And he knew he could give Joseph all the chances he never had. Joseph could study and pray and not have it all interrupted by backbreaking labor. Joseph wouldn't have to flee into the wilderness and live in hardship. Perhaps in his joy at the blessing of his son, Jacob couldn't see the pain he was causing. The way his treatment of Joseph ripped open those deep family wounds. Perhaps he thought it wouldn't matter since there was abundance enough for all his sons. None of them were poor like he had been poor. They had a home and they had each other and many flocks that belonged to all of them. And perhaps his sons did not grumble to him openly. But he seemed to suspect discontent when he sent Joseph to spy on them. And that broke it open. That was the day God's family got ugly indeed. The day all that family history and complication and pain erupted into blood and bruises and a brother at the bottom of a well. It almost killed Joseph until last second shame and remorse kept him in that well instead of dead. And then marched off in chains at the hands of a neighboring tribe. The brothers know it's wrong. You can tell. You can tell. But even the ones who feel some remorse go along with it, ultimately. They don't confess. They don't take it back. They all stay silent about the crime. And it unites them all. They unite in a lie around Joseph's bloody coat. They all let their father sink into the grief of losing a child. This lie that eats away at the foundation of the family, it sinks into them all and festers in them. The Bible is very clear that family can get ugly. Family are the people who know your dark secrets, and they are the people you hurt by keeping those secrets. Family are the people who have left the deepest wounds, who know how to hurt you the deepest. And sometimes they do. The same is true of the family of God this day. We all know someone who was wounded by the church, who instead of grace heard only judgment. People who have been told God will never love someone like them. Or I think of our Catholic brothers and sisters. How many of the same people who were entrusted to preach the gospel instead used their positions to take advantage of the vulnerable? And it happens in Protestant churches too. People abused and told to keep silent. Don't disrupt the peace of the church. Don't disrupt the peace of the family. As if letting evil and cruelty fester was truly keeping the peace. But it's not keeping the peace. Joseph does not live in peace. Joseph's brothers do not live in peace. They live in guilt and shame and fear. This story has been written down for thousands of years. So we know that the changes are coming. We know that this is not the end of the story, that there will be transformation here. But this Sunday, we do not rush to the end just yet. We look for the promises of grace even here, starting to work. God does not leave Joseph in their hands forever. For all the troubles that will come in his life, he will never again be in their cruel care. And another, God will not let the truth stay hidden forever. And one day the brothers will see that the person God has chosen to bless is the very one they have chosen to pretend no longer exists. That God's way of grace will undo all their well-kept secrets and reveal their secret shame. And even that this is not bad for them, far from it, for in that, God is working even for the redemption of the cruel brothers themselves. God is working salvation and goodness in spite of the worst they have done. And they will find that when their wounds are exposed to the open air, then they will cease to fester and start to heal, even them. Even them. As on a day much later, when one of their distant sons will hang on a cross, abandoned by all those he loved. As everywhere God's people have failed in their care, God has not abandoned the victims, and God has not abandoned the perpetrators. God is at work even as Joseph moves away with the slavers, with no sign of God's presence but the dreams that are fading into his past. God is at work even when on that lonely cross the heavens have not yet answered the pained cries of Jesus.